Hello and welcome in to Brewcast for Mason Brew on the SB Nation Podcast Network. I am Luke Chiardi, joined by Anthony Broom here with you on Monday night, September 6th, Labor Day, coming to you live on YouTube on the Mason Brew YouTube channel here. If you're listening on the podcast, I appreciate you tagging along. And remember that we are doing live shows every Monday night at 7:30. We love to get your questions and comments throughout the show. Unfortunately, here tonight, I know we had Steven Ossentoski on last week, introduced him as the third member of the show. He's dealing with a bit of an emergency here today, unfortunately. So Steven is going to be back next week. He was fantastic last week. Obviously, you don't have to be concerned that we're not rolling with Steven moving forward. Just unfortunately, something happened to come up with him. But we got a lot to get to. Mission coming off of the victory on Saturday in convincing fashion, moving forward to a game which will not be, we thought it wasn't going to be a top 25 matchup because we thought Michigan wasn't going to be in the top 25. That remains to be seen. Washington probably not going to be in the top 25 moving forward. So we got that. We got major injury news moving forward, obviously, here today. But before we get into all that, Anthony, what's going on, buddy?
Oh, it's good to be back. And so I'm glad we didn't give me a farewell from Monday nights, because plans change and you got to step in and pick up the slack. And obviously, I hope everything's good on Steven's end. It's kind of a holiday weekend, coming off the end of a holiday weekend too. So a lot going on, but we're here to do what we do, which is talk Michigan, whatever is going on. And it's, like I said, I think we've pretty thoroughly plowed what happened in the Western Michigan game. Like, we've talked about that. And we're, like I said, we're live here on YouTube. So if you guys have questions and thoughts, we'll throw them up on the screen here. Those of you guys who are listening after the fact, hey, it's an incentive to join us live on Monday nights at 7:30. But I do see Logan Evans in here as one of our subscribers. So shout out to Logan for being here. But yeah, I mean, I guess it's the elephant in the room is obviously Ronnie Bell. Like, there's two big ones. It's the Ronnie Bell injury. And then after that on Saturday night, you see Washington lose to FCS Montana. So it's pretty crazy show. I think what we should do first, though, is, being that I've been on the air, I don't think you've done anything in the Michigan, Western Michigan sphere yet. So I'm really interested to hear, like, your takes. Just you were at the game Saturday. So I want to hear about your experience, what you thought about the game, all that stuff.
First and foremost, man, how awesome was it, you know, to have under 9,000 people in the big house cheering and, you know, Michigan giving something to cheer about, man. It was a great feeling. I got chills a few times just because I felt like I couldn't take it for granted. You know, that was the thing that kept it in the back of my mind after last year, and just being able to get back there and having people cheering, man, it was truly something special. As for the game itself, I thought this was going in, this is what I wanted to see. This is the performance I needed to see from Michigan. You know, we talked about it on Brewcast last week. We talked about it on the betting, the Mason Brew picks. You know, is that what are we going to see? Is it going to be a close game? Is it going to be a game in the second half? And for the most part, it really wasn't. But that's not to say that there weren't concerns from the game. There really was only one touchdown drive for Western Michigan that, you know, didn't come in garbage time. It's a drive that never should have happened because of what, Anthony, I saw you tweet about it, man. That taunting call was an absolute joke. I mean, just so incredibly soft. That would have, maybe Western picks it up on 3rd and 12, but I seriously doubt it, the way Michigan was kind of flying around, you know, when they got Western into big down and distances. But there was some concern, particularly coverage wise, in the second half that I didn't like. Seemed like they shorted up a little bit. The defensive line got a little more dominant as the game progressed, particularly Aiden Hutchinson. He was fantastic. We saw some great performance. I thought Chris Hinton was fantastic in that game on Saturday, and that's what I love to see, because there's going to be a lot of defensive tackles that are rotating in, but Chris Hinton's a five-star guy. Five stars have to five-star, and I thought Dax Hill did that as well. Dax was everywhere, but particularly on those little screen passes, man, the way he was able to just kind of take on his blocker and still make a play, that is something that could be so huge for the Wolverines here. So all in all, I thought it was a good performance. I thought Cade looked great. One thing though, Anthony, that I don't know if we got you in, we'll talk about a bit about it as it goes on to the Washington game, that I didn't like it. And I was a little concerned with the play calling, and I don't know if it is just because it was Western Michigan, but with the starters in there, five of their first seven drives starting with run plays, and not necessarily, I don't think that's a good thing really, because you become predictable at that point. But even the two drives where they started with passes, they were kind of a play action, a little swing pass to Eric All and then a swing pass to Blake Corum. The play calling is a little predictable at times, and we say, hey, it's against Western Michigan, but we've seen it moving forward throughout the season. Like, when are they going to stop being predictable in the play calling area?
Yeah, I want to table that for when we start talking about Washington, because I sort of queued up my biggest, I don't know if it's a concern or maybe the biggest storyline in my brain heading into this weekend's game. So I think we should probably, like, I'm going to table that conversation for
now. So obviously
the unfortunate news.
Yeah, obviously the big news is, and my God, what a shame this was, because he was having an incredible day. Ronnie Bell on the punt return, and the fact that it happened on such a good punt return too really even makes it a worse kick in the groin, I think, a little bit. But Ronnie Bell confirmed today by Jim Harbaugh, he is done for the season. What happens now? And I don't think this is an easy answer for the Wolverines. Obviously, it's next man up, because you have no other choice. But Anthony, what exactly does next man up mean?
Well, it's more like next six men. The next six guys are up, because I don't want to understate the importance of what Ronnie Bell brings. I mean, he's a captain. He's a guy who, even when they had a wide receiver room that had Nico Collins and Donovan Peoples-Jones and Tariq Black, 2 years ago, he caught 48 passes. Last year, he caught 26. I think 74 catches over the last two seasons, not, you know, Saturday notwithstanding. That guy is incredibly important, and someone who just he's got a, obviously different positions, different players, but he's got a little bit of Jake Butt in him, where he's just open for some reason all the time. Maybe that's because they've had other guys there, but it's a big loss. But they have, you know, they're, if you're going to lose someone from that position group, have one glass of wine on a holiday and it throws you off. you're not okay, but you feel a little bit better about replacing a guy like that when you have a wide receiver room that includes Cornelius Johnson and Roman Wilson, AJ Henning, Mike Sainer still, Daylon Baldwin, Andre Anthony, Christian Dixon. Like, all of a sudden, like, you have to, I can't say you have to feel good about what you have there, but there's a lot of speed in that group. Like you saw on Saturday, AJ Henning had a touchdown. It was a run. Again, this is where Michigan's going to have to get a little bit creative with how they replace Ronnie Bell. But you saw his speed. Roman Wilson, we know he's got track star speed.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Sainer still, man, I mean, he had
his blocking, by the way, Saturday was something to behold. I mean, it was absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, and that's the one thing that's always been, I mean, cool. I know people say, oh, well, Michigan doesn't develop skill players, and they're right about that. But Jim Harbaugh wide receivers have always been pretty good run blockers down the field. And Mike Sainer still has taken to that, and he had an outstanding game on Saturday in that regard. But, you know, you don't always want the first thing you say about your wide receivers that, oh, he's a great blocker. Like, those guys have to make plays too.
Right.
And I think that, Ronnie Bell in limited action on Saturday was really the only guy that was open down the field or that was able to get separation down the field. So I have concerns about that, but you know, you don't just slide someone in to replace Ronnie Bell. You have to do it as a group. This is going to be, you know, it's already in my mind, this is Josh Gattis's biggest, you know, coaching year, because it's his third year with the new offense. You know, there's a lot in that room that they have to kind of mitigate this loss. And what you're going to see on probably starting on Saturday, and I don't really care that Washington lost to Montana. What Washington's going to come out and do is they're going to stack the box and they're going to throw eight guys in there and they're going to say, hey, you're not going to run the ball for 330 yards again. So Michigan's right. going to have to find a way to throw the football. And you know, given that Josh Gattis, one of his calling cards when he was hired at Michigan was that this guy has a rap sheet of developing wide receivers, we need to see that start happening at Michigan, because there's been some potential left on the table there. So all in all, it's got to be a group effort. You would hope that they're still, I mean, if they're still able to run the football and be physical up front, that obviously opens things up. And I think that's why Cade McNamara had such a good game on Saturday, was he just had to run the offense because the guys up front were doing what they had to do. So, yeah, you don't replace a Ronnie Bell. Like I said, a silver lining in it, I guess, is that he could potentially be back for a fifth year now. It depends on maybe what the NFL, if the NFL scouts have seen enough. I don't know. I'd have to do some searching around on that, but it sucks. It's unfortunate, but I don't feel like this isn't like if Aiden Hutchinson was out for the year or if Dax Hill was out for the year. This is obviously a captain that he's still going to be in the building. He's going to have to lead from the sideline now, but I feel similar to this to how I felt. Obviously, much different teams, different sports, much different scenario. But when Michigan lost Isaiah Livers this spring, you kind of felt like they had the pieces there to maybe Frankenstein some sort of solution. And I feel that that might be the case for this Michigan offense still.
I think there's a ton of talent in the wide receiver room, but I'm certainly worried with the lack of experience, because we saw this in 2017. I understand it was a different offense. The quarterback situation was not great in 2017, but you had three freshmen coming in, you know, in Tarik Black, Donovan Peoples-Jones, and Nico Collins, and trying to replace, you know, huge production that you lost the year before. Kind of similar to what you're doing here this year. You just, outside of Ronnie Bell, you don't have a lot of career production in the wide receiver room. I understand they're all talented, but you need someone that you can lean on these third and mediums and third and longs. I'm almost positive it was a third down where they lined up Ronnie in the slot, got him one-on-one, and ended up with a 76-yard touchdown pass. It was also a third down when he made the incredible one-handed catch that was one of the worst offensive pass interference calls I've seen. But he was a guy that Cade could rely on. Who's going to be that guy? I understand you're going to try and make it a team effort, but you still have to have some confidence in those guys that can go out and make the play. I think they're going to lean heavily on Eric All. I thought they ran and designed a ton of plays for him on Saturday. I think they're trying to get his confidence up. We know what happened last year kind of with the drops and him losing
his confidence.
It was nice
to see them get him one right off the bat.
Yes, absolutely. I think he's going to be key. Cornelius Johnson kind of working those short and intermediate routes on Saturday. I think we're going to see a lot of that. I'm just worried, you know, could this be the void for a guy like Daylon Baldwin to step up? We saw his athletic abilities on the incredible pass from J.J. McCarthy. But other than that, Daylon wasn't really getting out there. We saw a lot of Roman Wilson out there, particularly when Ronnie went down. Obviously, Cornelius is going to get a lot of time out there, and Sandra still was out there. It's mostly those three guys. Yeah. I'm wondering if Daylon's coming up to speed, but he is going to be the deep threat on this team if there is going to be a deep threat, in my opinion. So we'll see if he starts to get some more looks moving forward.
Let me ask you this, addressing what was kind of a big narrative from the fan base on Saturday. Do we have an issue with him being on punt returns?
I feel like I'm in the minority, and that's okay. I don't like it, particularly because he was really your only experienced receiver. You know, when Donovan Peoples-Jones was out there doing it, first and foremost, I know DPJ was an incredible punt returner at Cass Tech. That was kind of one of his bread and butters coming into Michigan. So, but you also had other guys that he came in with. You know, you still had Nico Collins, and Ronnie Bell had emerged at that point. We still don't know what this wide receiver room really is. You know, that's why I don't particularly like it. As it pertains to like Jabril Peppers, he was just one of the greatest guys. Not even in terms of punt returns, he saved an incredible amount of field position just in the fact that he would come up and catch punts that other people would let bounce and lose a ton of field position. That's where I thought Jabril was so incredibly valuable in that role in 2016. As for Ronnie Bell, obviously dynamic, but it's... Yeah, it's tough, but I hate to see it, and maybe I've got my blinders on because this injury happened, but with the lack of experience around him in that wide receiver room, I wasn't a huge fan of it, and obviously it really, really hurts the team. Now, what are your thoughts on that?
I don't have an issue with it. it's one of those things where, I mean, Desmond Howard returned punts. Jabril Peppers returned punts. In college, it's not. I think Devontae Smith returned some punts at Alabama last year. So to me, it's
fair.
What's the difference if on the catch he makes that wasn't a catch, he tears his ACL, or when he makes that cut to kind of get open on that touchdown, he tears his ACL? Like, he's a football player. You could, when you're moving like that, and you could torque that knee at any time, and it could happen. He could have done it running out on the field, touching the banner. You know what I mean? So I don't have an issue with it, especially when, you know, the backup punt returner winds up being Caden Kolsar, who is a walk-on.
That, you know, they absolutely shocked me. I'm not going to lie to you there. And maybe that's a thing where Ronnie emerged as the guy and they don't really work anyone else into that role, you know, because you only spend so much time during the week on punt returning. Well, I would imagine punts, maybe he's the only guy getting reps.
Yeah, fielding punts is, I mean, I've never done it. I don't have the requisite athleticism to even punt a football, let alone return a punt. But that's an incredibly hard job to do. And during Jim Harbaugh's Monday press conference, they more or less said, you know, for right now, Caden Kolsar is, he's the next in line, but we like him as the guy that is our gunner or the rusher on special teams. So when he's not in that role, you lose something there. A.J. Henning, Jim Harbaugh said, fits the bill exactly for what they want there. But
that guy's fast, man.
It seems like they're just like, hey, A.J., we think you fit here. You have to come get this. So it's going to be a pretty critical week in practice for that. And it was nice to actually talk to A.J. Henning after Jim Harbaugh. He was one of the players they made available. And he said, it's a work in progress for me still. And he's interested in doing it. And I think given a full week to rep that, I bet you he's the one taking punts back on Saturday night. But I don't have an issue. It's football.
And like you just mentioned, Anthony, maybe it was just one of those things where, hey, Ronnie Bell kind of was the only guy they felt comfortable with doing it. It wasn't a decision that they made that he was the best. Maybe he was really the only decision to make.
Yeah. Your best. I see someone said in the comments here, Jake Raymond, I'll pull it up. You have to have your best hands guy field.
And it makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, it is what it is. And I've seen a couple people in here say something about, you know, it's a lot harder than it looks, and it could have happened on any playlist. I don't
like you would hope a guy like me personally, a dynamic guy, a five-star guy in like Donovan Edwards. I know it's not easy to just get him in there and have him start fielding punts, you know, whether he gets there in the spring or whatever. I know it's not an easy thing, but that's like kind of the ideal situation, right? Is this is a five-star guy that we don't think is going to crack the running back rotation of Haskins and Corum unless someone gets hurt or unless the score is big, but you want to get him on the field somehow and get the ball in his hands. And you feel like kick return or punt return would be perfect for that. But like a lot of folks in the comments have pointed out, it's not an easy gig.
No, it's not. And like I said, it's football. I mean, Jake Butt, bless his heart, he tore his ACL in a bowl game. And what if, again, I'm not even going to say what I was about to say. Like, anyone that made a play in that game at any point could have just moved the wrong way and you have a knee injury. That's football. And
you just want to limit the chances of that happening. But at the end of the day, if you don't really have another choice, you don't have another choice, you know?
Jim Harbaugh has always put the best guys on the field. This isn't, you know, it's not like Madden or NCAA where you put the guy who has the most speed in at the kick return or punt return. Like, it's not. It's a skill, like punt returner is a skill position, period. So I don't have an issue with it. And like I said, it's unfortunate. For whatever reason, the football gods decided that Ronnie Bell was not going to be a big part of the on-field story of the 2021 Michigan Wolverines. Oh. But hopefully he's able to be a guy who can,
I mean, how good did he look there in that first half prior to that, though? That is the worst part about this, because he's been such a guy. Obviously, he's been through a lot. You know, 2019, well, you know, I felt so bad for him from the Penn State thing. And then, you know, he's just worked, you know, incredibly hard. I feel like it looked like his energy was outstanding on Saturday. He was making plays even if they didn't count. But I can't get over. This is probably one of the worst I've ever felt for an injury in my like fandom or any sort of days, you know, watching sports for as long as I have. I just feel so bad for the kid.
Yeah, it sucks. And I don't know why bad things happen to good players like that. No, I can't speak for Ronnie or his family or what the thought decision-making process is, but my gut tells me that his story at Michigan isn't done yet. So
yeah.
Before we move on to Washington, I want to clean up some of the questions here as we kind of put a bow on Saturday. Both of these are from Logan Evans, so I'll put them up. He wants to know, would you put Michigan in the top 25 after a 47-14 dub over Western Michigan? Luke, thoughts?
I think yes, in the sense that you look at some of the other scores around the country. Obviously, Washington going to drop out of the top 25. I mean, Indiana just got absolutely stomped by Iowa, 34-6. They were the number 17 team. I understand Iowa was number 18, but that's not even a close ball game. There's a good chance you potentially kick Indiana out. What do you do with Louisiana? You're basing a lot of that 23 ranking on what they did a year ago. Michigan went out. They were up massively in this game. They were up 47-7. They look good. I understand it's Western Michigan, but it's almost like a by default thing. They blew them out. Do you drop LSU out of the rankings? Who knows? But I feel like at least Michigan, Indiana, maybe Louisiana dropping out, I feel like Michigan should be in the 25-24 range.
Yeah, I feel like anyone not named Alabama and Ohio State, I just was not super impressed by this weekend. So
yeah.
Can I safely say there are 25 better teams in college football than Michigan right now? I can't, but I don't know. It also feels like there is a bit of a, I don't know if you want to call it a course correction or whatever. It feels like the Big Ten East might be kind of back to that top four potentially being Ohio State and then some cluster of Penn State, Michigan, and Michigan State. I was very impressed with what I saw from Michigan State on Friday, but we don't.
Was not a good look for the West this week.
No, pretty bad look actually. And talking about guys that are out for the year, likable guys, senior guys, Mo Ibrahim is also out for the year at Minnesota. So much for my Minnesota's winning the West pick. But I want to clean up another one here with Logan before we move on. Should Cade's performance, 9 of 11, 136 yards, 2 touchdowns, be a sign of what to expect for the rest of the season? Or should we carry a little caution because of Milton's first game last year? I'll start with this one. I think that at some point they will throw more than he'll throw more than 11 times in a game. He'll have to. It'll probably come as early as Saturday. They did throw 17, like the 43 rushes to 17 passes. There's no way that ratio can withstand, if you're going to win football games this season. So they did what they had to do on Saturday. I'm fine with that. Cade's a shorter guy. So the two incompletions being balls bad at the line of scrimmage, that's something we'll have to kind of keep an eye on. But other than that, he did what I've been saying he's going to do all along. He comes in, he's not spectacular, but he runs the offense, he makes the right throw, he moves the chains, and that's the perfect, I think there's the potential there for more for him. But I mean, he's a cool customer, man. He's calm, collected, and at some point, like, let's talk the other elephant in the room, what we saw with J.J. McCarthy on Saturday. It was rough going until that 69-yard touchdown. Like, it was kind of a herky-jerky freshman performance. At some point, that guy, I don't know if it'll be this year. Maybe it'll be sometime next year. I don't know. At some point, that guy is going to be too talented to keep off the field. But if Cade McNamara is the quote-unquote placeholder guy, I don't know if it gets much better than that. I think that I was pretty impressed with this was a stat I heard today. So Cade McNamara, between the Wisconsin game last year, the Rutgers game, the Penn State game, and then this opener on Saturday, he's led 22 drives for Michigan to this point in his career. And I think they've scored, they've punted 7 times. They've scored 12 touchdowns and gotten 3 field goals out of it. That's a pretty good success rate.
Yeah.
So, I think he's going to be able to move them down the field. Again, I don't know if they're play calling. We'll talk about that here in a little bit. But I would say Michigan fans should always be cautious, but I think you can be cautiously optimistic here.
Well, I get to answer Logan's question here. It's pretty much for me is what did we see from Cade? Like you said, 11 passes, a number of those being swing passes, particularly off play action to Eric All or those swing passes to the running backs. When we did get to see Cade let loose, oh my God, did he throw a couple of beautiful balls, particularly to Ronnie Bell. Both of them. The touchdown was an absolute drop in the bucket. The one-handed catch Ronnie made, that was an incredible placement along the sideline to where only Ronnie could get it. When we allowed, or when the coaching staff allowed Cade to throw the football, I thought he was spectacular. The question moving forward is going to be, how much confidence does this coaching staff have in him? Because after Western Michigan tied this game up and Blake Corum almost took it to the house, after a false start, they ran three straight times. They did not let Cade put it in the air at all. They didn't. It felt like at the time the coaching staff didn't trust him. They were like, we're in field goal range. We'll just take the points no matter what happens. We're backed up on first and 15. We didn't get what we wanted. We're going to run a draw on third down. I hated it. Let the kid throw it because he's proven that he can throw it. But that series in particular really played into that game manager theory that we have. And I would like to see them let him cut it loose a little bit, because I think he's proven, as you mentioned, Anthony, with the different series, he's a pretty damn good quarterback.
Yeah, I'm cool with what we saw from both quarterbacks. Like I said, wasn't it the Minnesota game last year where Michigan still had its starters in with like 7.5 minutes to go?
Yeah.
They didn't screw around this time around. I think they were only up, what was it, maybe 24-7 or 20, whatever it was, 26-7. I don't know. But it was pretty early in the third quarter that they kind of flipped the script with, you know, getting JJ and those guys in there. And JJ, like I said, the more snaps that guy gets, and someone asked this during the press conference today, was it the plan to play JJ McCarthy as much as he did? And Harbaugh's like, yeah, I hope I can play him like that more often. Right. Coming in for mop-up duty, you know what I mean? So
I'd love to see JJ in that same scenario on this Saturday, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. It would be nice, wouldn't it? So, yeah, that's kind of, you know, we could go into defensive stuff from Saturday. I'll just say this. Cautiously, again, another cautiously optimistic thing.
Yeah.
I think things are going to be a little bit rough there for a bit. I had heard last week that I won't even say it. I heard an underclassman skill player that has not been given an opportunity to play yet scored like 4 or 5 touchdowns against the first team defense in practice throughout the last week or so. So they certainly performed better than that on Saturday, but I
was concerned with coverage a little bit. Yeah. I think it was my biggest takeaway.
And I don't know if that's something they're going to be able to fix this year. I hope those guys.
A little more comfortable in a new scheme, you know, as the season rolls along. But you're teaching different principles to what they've anyone who's been in this program the last couple of years.
Yeah, the one thing I will say, like obviously Aiden Hutchinson, what else is there to say? I mean, it's not like he had 4 sacks, but he was disruptive throughout the day. Daxton Hill, I like them kind of when they go into nickel and dime packages. He's going to be playing in the slot. I like that guy being as close to the line of scrimmage as he can be at all times. So cool with that. Cool with the win. You did exactly what you're supposed to do.
I was a little bit surprised by that, Anthony, that Dax did play in the slot so much. But like you said, that was it was a pleasant surprise, I think.
I think it speaks too to how they feel about RJ Moten. That's a guy they really like, and they're trying to get on the field. And he even said he was repping with the ones during camp. So I dig it. I like the look. I like the scheme. I like the adjustments that were made after kind of a rough first drive or first couple drives. All in all, like I said in the post-game podcast Saturday, you did what you had to do against the MAC team. So we ready to talk some Washington?
Yeah, we are. Real quick, Adrian Robertson, he says, why do you think they hold our QBs back from throwing the ball? It's so frustrating as a fan. And buddy, oh my God, am I right there with you? I have absolutely no idea. The amount of between the guards runs that this team likes to run, Josh Gattis likes to call as a play caller, is sometimes mind-blowingly frustrated. I at this point, I'm not expecting to really see much different. It is what it is. This is his third year, and we didn't see a lot different on Saturday, so I wouldn't expect it moving forward.
Yeah, well, we'll be talking about Mr. Gattis here in a moment. So
And if it works, I mean, hey, by all means, if they can do it, you know, as long as they win ball games, that's really all I care about. We'll just see if they're able to do it moving forward. And they've got a Washington team coming in that, you know, was a top 25 team here, but they go and they lose at home to an FCS school, Montana, 13-7 on Saturday, which I would imagine was a pretty ugly game to watch. I didn't have the Pac-12 network, so I didn't get to lay my eyes on this one, but I feel like I was a little blessed in not having to do this. This is a bit of a nightmare of a game. No scoring in the second and third quarters. Montana puts up 10 in the fourth to win this one 13-7. Washington maybe I don't know. Were they a little overrated coming in? I'm looking at the results from last year, Anthony. They went 3-1, a 6-point win against Oregon State, a 17-point win against Arizona, and a 3-point win against Utah, and a loss by 5 to Stanford. Returning about 18 starters, a lot of offensive production, but not a lot of sample to go off of last season. So maybe they were a bit overrated coming into this season.
I don't know because one.
Yeah, I mean, obviously a little overrated. They lost to an FCS school in week one. You know, Michigan was very overrated in 2007. So
Michigan was overrated after 1 week last year. So, I mean, it's overrated, underrated. Honestly, who cares? And this is where I set the table for how I feel about this game this week. And not in like a. I think when I tweeted this on Saturday, people thought it was like me doing a Chicken Little, the sky is falling, everything's terrible type thing. Saturday provides a very unique learning experience and a very quick test of if this culture change that Michigan has been talking about is real, because it is the exact same scenario as last year. You come out in the opener, you dominate a team full of traffic cones, you do whatever you want running the football, and the opponent you play, which last year was Michigan State, they lost to Rutgers, turned over the ball 7 times. This year, it's Washington, who lost to an FCS school. Everyone is kind of like, it's gone from being a game where you're not sure if Michigan's going to win or not to you better win this game. And this is where, and I think I said this in the podcast on Saturday too, like, is Michigan going to come out? And this is where my Josh Gattis, the questions, he looms over all this. Ronnie Bell, how do you replace him? Washington, quarterbacks throwing the football, like he's the through line of all of this, right? And it's not, you know, it's a collaborative thing. So all of the offensive staff is involved in this. Jim Harbaugh wears this too. Is it going to be, well, we showed in week one that we're big bully Michigan and we're going to punch you in the mouth and we're going to run the ball down your throat and you're just going to have to stop it. Now, Washington is, whether Washington lost to Montana or not, they come into the Big House next week as a much better team than Michigan State was last year. And like I said, is there going to be some, are you going to be able to, when Washington loads the box to stop the run, there might not be enough as much wiggle room for Blake Corum as there was. You know, those gaps might not be there for a guy like Hassan Haskins to run through. So how do you adjust to that? How does your, we'll call it hubris. When you run the ball 43 times in a game, you keep doing it because you want to be a bully. You want to set a tone. What did they learn from last year? I guess is what I'm getting at. So I think you're better at the quarterback position and that helps. But other than that, like the table's set for a pretty big learning experience in this second game.
I honestly don't know what to expect from Washington coming in. I'm really only going on the box score against Montana. I haven't went and looked at the highlights or anything, but Dylan Morris was 27 of 46. And like you said, they didn't have 7 turnovers against Montana, but it's a -3 turnover differential. You know, the 65 yards on 27 carries, maybe a little misleading. Morris looks like he was, he had 4 rushes for -24 yards. Whether they counted sack yards in that or those were legit rushes, I have no idea. I don't know what to expect from them, to be quite honest with you. Maybe they were looking ahead to Michigan. Maybe they were preparing all week for Michigan because they had an FCS school coming in. We don't know. But like you said, this is we've had a lot of quotes. You know, Aiden Hutchinson said they haven't done a damn thing. They're not satisfied. But as many people have pointed out here, Washington's going to be pretty hungry coming into the Big House. I don't think they're going to lay down and die because they lost to Montana last week. That they're going to be looking to prove to someone because they've probably had this game circled on the schedule a little bit, especially considering Michigan was supposed to go out to Washington last year and wasn't able to make the trip. So they're going to definitely want to come in and make a statement to the country. Their season's not over. They still got the Pac-12 to look forward to. Like, their playoff chances are pretty much not at this point, but the season is not over for Washington by any stretch of the imagination. They're looking to put their best foot forward, but we don't have much to go off last year and going off of last week. I mean, I hate to say it, Michigan. I feel like Michigan should win this game. Is that
better?
You know. I mean, absolutely. I feel like they absolutely should win this game. Considering, you know, Montana beat them, you should be able to go out there and beat them.
Well, and I've seen people on Twitter say, "Oh, well, this now it's a lose lose for Michigan, because if you win, people will say Washington was bad and you should have beaten them. And if they lose,
I don't disagree with that."
I do disagree with that, because you know what? guess what? It's a win lose, because if you win, you go to 2-0. If you lose, you're 1-1, and you should be.
But Western is a lose lose, right?
Mm-hmm. But what do you mean?
You know, like you only play the teams that are in front of you. But we can, as you know, as fans, as you know, people, we break down what we like from the game against Western, and we, you know, talk about maybe some of the things they need to work on. But you should never, Michigan should never lose to Western Michigan. Never. Michigan should never be in a dogfight with Western Michigan in the second half.
They didn't, and they weren't.
Right. But also not saying, hey, Michigan is going to contend for the Big Ten because of what they did against Western Michigan. It's a lose-lose in the sense that, like, if you win, you should have. And if you lose, or if it's close, then everyone's going to hit the panic button. But at the end of the day, if you're Michigan, you just have to go out and win. Like, that's it. You only play the teams that are in front of you. I guess the lose-lose isn't for the team itself, but more of the perception of the team from us and the voters, which at the end of the day really mean not.
I mean, we've seen what good the perception of the program is. So, like, I don't care if people – they don't care what people are saying. Jim Harbaugh said during his press conference on Monday, it's not – what Washington did last week isn't relevant.
Right. You still have to win the game. Opponent.
Yeah, I don't buy the lose-lose – the thought that, oh, well, you know, a win is a loss because you should have beaten them anyways. No, a win is a win because you beat them, period.
Yeah, I will say this, though, from the way I'm looking at it, is this is still going to be the same Washington team this Saturday that it was going to be whether they beat Montana or not. But down the line, at the end of the day, if Michigan wins the Big Ten championship and, you know, has zero or one losses, they're going to go to the playoffs. So it doesn't really matter. But just as something, as a perception, like, this is the same Washington team. Michigan, we now know, is probably better than Washington. But if Washington doesn't lose that game to Montana, I feel like maybe we take more away from the victory on Saturday.
Yeah, but okay.
If it happens, I'm obviously not saying that it's in the bag.
So humor me for a second. So I'm going to pull up Michigan's schedule, and these are all teams on Michigan's schedule that had a really terrible first week of the season. Washington,
right?
Wisconsin, Nebraska, Northwestern, Indiana. That's pretty much it. I mean, so if they win all those games, is it a lose-lose because, oh, well, they were supposed to win those games? No, win the games.
In terms of if Michigan wins the Big Ten with two losses on the schedule, say they beat Ohio State, but they stumble against Washington and Penn State. Okay?
Sure.
So, I mean, if they lose to Washington on Saturday and they're a two-loss Big Ten champ, and Washington, you know, finishes third in the Pac-12 or something like that and has the loss to Montana, look, Michigan's going to get left out. Like, that's kind of where I'm looking at it from.
In this scenario, Michigan's going to Indy, so now I'm just, like, in a fever dream. So
but you know.
If your scenario happens, I'm getting shrimp cocktail from St. Elmo's.
So right, yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
You know what I mean?
But all I mean is that Michigan should win this game, and whether or not Washington beat Montana on Saturday or not, Michigan still should win this game. I would just prefer it's a 1-0 ranked Washington team. But at the end of the day, you still got to go win the damn game.
I just don't. Why do we care how people perceive what the quality of the win was. You know what the best
well,
way?
Well, we need the college. I mean, I'm well, getting way ahead of myself here, but you need the committee. You need the committee to perceive it in a way.
The committee. This team might. We still don't know if this team wins more than 7 or 8 games.
That's what I mean. I said I'm getting ahead of myself here, but I mean, hey, you got to take every week with that look until they start losing.
They will.
You know?
They will always move the goalposts. If they go undefeated and beat Ohio State, people will say that Ohio State was overrated. So it doesn't matter to me, I guess. I guess at the end of the day, you know what the best possible result where it becomes truly a win and no one can debate it is you beat the brakes off of them like you did to Western this week, because that's what you should do.
Well,
I can't say like they're 6.5-point favorite. We can't say like, oh, well, I expect them to blow this team out. But you know what?
Right.
You're a good football team. You're going to beat you beat the piss out of this team on Saturday. That's what it boils down to. So if they blow them out, yeah, this might be a very good football team. If they don't, well, we'll see what happens with the other games they play. But I don't care what Paul Feinbaum thinks of what Michigan does against Washington. I don't care what Kirk Herbstreit thinks. I don't care what it doesn't matter. 2-0 is 2-0. 2-0 sets them up to go.
Well, what do you think if Washington beats the hell out of Montana? And Michigan wins in a close one. Is your perception of this team changed as it would be if Michigan goes and wins a close one now?
No, because they will have beaten a Pac-12 team and are 2-0. So, but at the same time, I'm totally in lockstep with Jim Harbaugh here, which now I'm really dizzy. Now I'm really feeling weird. What if they beat Montana? Like, what if they won that game on the last drive and didn't throw a pick? What if they blew them out? It's completely irrelevant. Like, if you want to send a message, I don't care if Montana won 70-3 on Saturday or lost like they did 13-7. If you want to send a message that your culture has changed, that you've rebounded as a program, that things are on the right track, you come out Saturday night before a national audience with the lights on at the Big House and you beat the hell out of this team. Period. Period.
I don't know. I don't know if they have it in them. Like
I don't know either. I don't feel like I know much more about this team than I did.
Right.
Despite what happened with what,
like again, I said, I still think it's a talented Washington team. You know, that's the thing. I'm trying not to get in my head of myself. Like, oh, they lost to Montana. Michigan's going to come in and beat the heck out of them because we learned our lesson last year.
Right. Yeah. We'll see. Like I said, the same conversation, like what Michigan did last week was irrelevant because we don't really know what they are either. Maybe that's a blip on the radar game, not to the extent that losing to an FCS team is, but maybe to the exact opposite. So like, you know what? If you're a good football team, you not only win this game Saturday, but you do it in pretty impressive fashion. So I think that's what I'm looking for. I don't buy the lose-lose stuff.
We got
maybe put a bow on this show.
Yeah, for sure. I was just scouring for some.
So no. I like that.
I was just scouring for some questions here. I don't think we have really any new ones other than Nicholas asking who's who. We got our names on the thing if you're watching on YouTube there. So
yeah, maybe that's where I will not skimp on putting out what our social media and where to find us is today. Yeah. But I feel like a preacher. I feel like I just stood up on the pulpit and spread the good word. So.
The good word of the Michigan football gospel here. So we'll let them know first and foremost, for those of you that were expecting to see Steven and you weren't here for the start of the show, Steven's going to be back next week. Just had a bit of an emergency to get to. So I'm sure, you know, he's going to have a lot of videos up here this week, but we're wishing him well and can't wait to be back with him next Monday. Anthony, for you, where can we find you? Any site business that you need to get out there?
Well, first and foremost, thanks to Logan Evans here. Again, we've been doing this on YouTube for you guys that are listening after the fact. Logan Evans, let's get a shout out for memberships, too. So you can join as a member of our YouTube page by clicking below. The join button's right there. For the price of buying one of us a beer each month, you get early access to Steven's videos. You get some other perks. All that's laid out. So that's below. You can follow me on Twitter, Anthony T. Broom. Follow the website at Maize and Brew, wherever you are on social media. We're everywhere at this point. Apple, Google, Spotify, Stitcher for all of our podcasts. Subscribe, leave a 5-star review. So those of you who were in for the first time, welcome. For those of you who keep coming back, we love the engagement. We love the interaction and appreciate you being here. So we'll see. It's a big week for everyone here. So there's no looking back. Full steam ahead.
Logan, I hope you got a chance to get Steven's hype video a little bit early, man. That thing was awesome. I know that hopefully that made the membership worth it. We really appreciate you. Really appreciate everyone hanging out with us on Monday nights. Love looking at the comments and questions, man. I love that football season's back. I hope this team gives us something good to talk about moving forward. Don't forget to subscribe to the YouTube page so you know when we are going to be coming on and any new videos that drop. Hit the bell as well. For those listening on the podcast, you can subscribe to the YouTube page and be with us every Monday night at 7:30 for Brewcast. And don't forget, when you're listening on the pod, subscribe, rate, and leave a review. We really appreciate that. So that's about going to wrap it up for us here on this Monday night. Can't wait to be back next week and look back on the Michigan-Washington game. For Anthony Broom, I'm Luke Yardy. We'll see you next week on Brewcast.